Welcome to That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino. I've got PJ here with me. And PJ, the season's over. The cups are over. The competitions are over. There's nothing left to play for.
There's one more. One more big one.
There's one more big one, but no English clubs are involved in it. And Champions League will be fun to sit back and watch that one completely off the clock. But the podcast, to wrap it all up, and we'll get into, I think, only two topics today. We're going to drop the third so we can do 15 minutes and 15 minutes on Europa League final, what it means for Manchester United to lift that trophy, the one they've never won, and FA Cup win for Arsene Wenger, a record seventh for him. Incredible accomplishment for Arsene Wenger as a manager, and we'll get into what that means and his future and all that. But before we get into those topics, let's talk about the reviews, because we all know I only have this podcast to massage my ego, and we're going to read three fun reviews, and for you Tad Potters that know this, you're going to hear it again. For first-time listeners, we like to just play with the reviews a little bit. The reviews help. They bump us up in the ratings. They make it easier for people to find the podcast, so please do it, and also have a little fun with it and drop in a movie quote, a movie reference, and here are three of my favorites from the past couple weeks. Pod by KGriff28. Great pod. Love the format. A very good insight on the beautiful game. London? Yes, London. You know, fish, chips, cup of tea, bad food, and worse weather. Mary effing Poppins, London. I'm embarrassed that I don't know this one. But I'm sure I've seen this movie.
I'm pretty sure you have. Snatch.
Oh, that's Snatch. Okay, yeah.
By the way, KGriff28, is that Ken Griffey Jr.?
It might be.
Is Ken Griffey
the
Jr.?
Griff. The Griff's a Tad Potter. Thanks for listening, Griff. The next one, Every Soccer Topics by Ma Smith 21. I feel the need for speed to listen to this pod. All right, I don't need help with that one. Kyle Nartino, typo, is not only breaking down three major factors affecting the game of soccer that week. This pod is good for anything from driving to work or even to class on campus. This is one of the pods I will come back to again and again. Keep it up, Martino. He got Martino right the second time. My safety's Harvard, which is a quote from one of my favorite movies of all time by Burnsy NY. My top schools where I want to apply are Oxford and the Sorbonne. My safety's Harvard. So obviously I'm a smart guy and you should respect my opinion. This is a great pod. And if you've never seen Rushmore, how dare you? If you're Rebecca Lowe, I expect you to not have seen Rushmore. But if you're a Tad Potter, you have to be watching Wes Anderson movies or we're not friends. All right, let's get into it. Jose Mourinho did it. He did it, okay? And I have to start by giving Mourinho credit reluctantly, as hard as it's going to be for me, and to tell you why it's hard for me. When Jose Mourinho was announced as the Manchester United manager, said that they were going to regret this decision. He was not going to be good for Manchester United. And my thesis took a big hit with Jose Mourinho landing the trophy they've never won. So three trophies in his first season with Manchester United. Yes, one of them isn't exactly a trophy. The Community Shield is basically a glorified friendly. Yes, there are B trophies in terms of the lower of the domestic trophies. Not the FA Cup, but he won the League Cup. Not the Champions League, but the Europa League. But still, you have to give him credit. I mean, he came to deliver trophies. He came to deliver titles. We don't have titles yet. But in a otherwise disappointing season, he delivered, and he cornered himself in prioritizing the Europa League. He had the entire success of the season hinge on one game against Ajax in Stockholm, and he won that game. How he won that game, we'll get onto in a moment. But, you know, Manchester United were a bit desperate. They wanted to get back to winning things, and they went to the man who's a chronic winner, a man who delivers trophies, and Jose Mourinho has done that in his first season. So he deserves credit for that. I'm gonna applaud that a little bit. But what that does is paper over a disappointing season otherwise. It papers over a lot of problems. It papers over the fact that they finished 24 points behind Chelsea. And ultimately, Jose Mourinho was brought back to deliver that trophy. They want another title. The most successful English club of all time want to be top of the Premier League table in May. So that is his ultimate challenge. And in terms of that challenge, they're way off. They're way off. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars on talent, not even including the free man they got in Ibrahimovic, who was one of their most productive players. And they're finishing behind where Louis van Gaal was finishing in the league. So that's a problem that these trophies paper over. And the trophies, I think, because the Europa League trophy delivers something so important, Champions League, and not only Champions League, delivers guaranteed Champions League as opposed to finishing fourth like Liverpool did, and they're gonna have to play a very difficult play-in game to get into Champions League proper. So in terms of the campaign, they were going to struggle to recruit top talent. That trophy, that Europa League trophy, is going to help them greatly in that area to continue to recruit world-class talent to be able to compete in the Premier League next season.
I mean, yeah, like you said, it saves this whole season for him, really, because if they hadn't, I don't know if you'd be seeing these rumors for Griezmann or maybe James. We can get into whether or not those guys would actually be good signings, but now he's got another good reason for people to want to come in and play, because they can't play in the Champions League, which some of these other clubs, like Arsenal, which we'll get into later, can't guarantee.
Yeah, and I would have come on here and been incredibly critical of Mourinho, and I'm going to still be critical in a certain way. So I have to do the opposite and say Jose Mourinho, his gamble paid off, and it was smart because he took the path of least resistance, also the path that led to a trophy that, even though the reason they haven't won it is because it's a competition beneath their caliber, it still is big. That was a big moment. It felt big. You saw the pictures. It made you feel like Manchester United's headed in the right direction, but he was smart to do that because they weren't going to be good enough to finish in the top four. And I kept arguing that he should have prioritized that because I really thought they had a chance at that. And the difference is losing one game in the Europa League would have been the difference of being in Champions League next year versus they could have lost a game in the run-in in the league and still finish in the top four. So regardless, Mourinho got that right. Calculation worked. That ultimately was a good move. But now let's go on to, outside of how far they are from winning a title, the other problem, what it looked like to win that game against Ajax. So the Ajax coach has come out, which you expect him to be a bit of a sore loser, and said that Jose Mourinho made it a boring game, which isn't sour grapes. He did make it a boring game. And Jose does this all the time. This is one of the reasons I was reluctant to be on board with the Jose Mourinho signing. And by the way, I'll take a step back and sort of offer the counter argument. Jose Mourinho isn't always boring. You know, his Real Madrid team, broke a record for goal scoring, won the title that year. Some of his Chelsea teams, especially the last title they won the first half of the season, they were very open, they were aggressive. But ultimately, Jose Mourinho is a pragmatic manager. I mean, people throw out that Real Madrid stat, forgetting the fact that when Real Madrid win the ball back, they're Real Madrid. So it doesn't really matter how defensive you are. Once they win the ball, they're not lobbing it up to Fellaini with Real Madrid. So what I struggled with watching that game, here's Manchester United, a success built off of one of the best managers, if not the best managers of all time, who invited risk, a glory delivered by being risky, by going after games. And listen, was Sir Alex Ferguson, and even in the latter stages, sometimes pragmatic? Yeah, of course. But ultimately, his style was a risky one. And to move from that to someone that goes into a final, Europa League final, with one of the most expensive teams ever put together, and plays against an under-23 Ajax team put together with $25 million and plays like the underdog. Manchester United played like the underdog in a game against kids when the kids played like the most expensive team, or tried to play like the most expensive team ever constructed. So the purist in me, which, listen, I understand that there are people that love the defensive approach. We'll throw out teams like Juventus and these other examples of defensive-minded teams that are great. And yes, I understand that. But Jose Mourinho, more often than not, makes it hard to watch the game. And it was hard to watch that Europa League final. Was it efficient? Was it successful, ostensibly? Yes. But when you stockpile world-class talent to play like the underdog, I've got a problem, because more often than not, when you stockpile world-class talent and you have one of the best teams in the league, it can work. It's efficient. You can go and win games. He can win titles that way. But it's rarely entertaining. And Jose Mourinho said afterwards, when he's faced with that criticism, like he always is, you know, poets don't win titles. Yeah, well, I would say poets win titles. I would say Pep Guardiola is a poet, and he's won plenty of titles. I would say there are plenty of examples of guys that have attacked. Arsene Wenger's a poet, and he won a title with the Invincibles. He just won another FA Cup, the best ever manager in that competition, and he's a poet. But the thing is, poets don't win titles, maybe, but you know what? Pragmatists don't win hearts, and that's the big problem. At the end of the day, with Jose Mourinho, is the anti-football. I mean, it is anti-football more often than not with this guy.
So, the biggest question I always have about this with Mourinho is he wins. That's guaranteed. He's won everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's won Champions League. He's won league titles everywhere he's gone. In terms of his long-term legacy, because he wins in this style, that's not the most attractive. Does it hurt him in terms of how people will view him as he one of the best managers of all time? I mean, think about Guardiola, for example. Mm-hmm. The first season, basically, when he won the treble with Barcelona, everyone was automatically starting to think, wow, this guy has the potential to be the best manager of all time because of how attractive it was, how free-flowing and beautiful. We'd never really seen a Mourinho team play that way. Does that hurt? Does he have, if he wants to have that long-term legacy as one of the greatest managers in the world, does he need to have a team like that or at least show it a few times?
He doesn't need to because this is who he is, and he's never going to be that guy. And
he's just always going to go with the numbers. He says, look at my numbers. Yeah, look at all the trophies.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a great argument.
Yeah?
I mean, a trophy case, Jose Mourinho's trophy case, is going to look better than all the managers we're talking about, Pep Guardiola and others, who are the poets, who play the total football, who do it in a way that we enjoy, that we love, that speaks to the soul of what you love about the game. But Jose Mourinho's got a really strong argument. Titles, all right?
Yeah.
That's all I care about. And there are many people that say, that's good enough for me. Manchester United fans right now, they've really never had to decide between style and titles. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson delivered both. And again, Sir Alex Ferguson's style wasn't always, there's this sort of, this myth that he was always on the front foot, always free-flowing, always, it wasn't always that way, but mostly. I mean, and that's one of the reasons he's so beloved, is that he delivered it, and delivered it in a way that was enjoyable to watch. And Musty and I are always on this, and I heard Musto the other day in his podcast on the Two Robbies, which, by the way, got to listen to that if you're not, is he said, I'd rather buy a ticket to go watch Ajax play than Manchester United. He's absolutely right. I'd rather go watch that young Ajax team play. And it was disappointing that one of the reasons I'm bitter, not only that my argument has suffered a little bit, that Jose Mourinho again delivered in a way that was expected in a pragmatic, very conservative way, but he also killed the beauty of that Ajax team. That Ajax team got to the Europa League final and is a throwback to some of the beautiful Ajax teams with Bergkamp and Lippmann and Overmars and you know, playing Kluivert as a teenager in a Champions League final, Finidi George and all these guys. I mean, it was a throwback to that. It was beautiful. You want to encourage teams to want to play that way, but it didn't work. It didn't work. And so, you know, it's sort of like it's Luke and Darth. You know, they both have the force. They both have this power, and you can use it in one of two ways. And that's what's so interesting is in Manchester right now, there are two clubs that are stockpiling world-class talent. Manchester City just acquired the biggest name of the transfer window so far with their signing of the Monaco star, the Portuguese Bernardo Silva. And Manchester United are going to go after world-class talent, but they're going to use the players in totally different ways, complete opposite sides of the spectrum. Pep Guardiola is going to try to find a way to get Sterling, Silva, De Bruyne, and Silva.
And Sané.
Two Silvas and Sané. Yeah. He's going to try to find a way to get them all in the field at the same time.
I don't know how he's going to do it.
How he's going to do it.
You have Gabriel Jesus and Aguero, too.
We're going to love watching him try to do that. And what Jose Mourinho is going to do is find a way to get Fellaini onto the field and find a way to go direct to Fellaini. And listen, I say that, and the immediate, I can hear the Manchester United fan right now who's screaming in his car on his way to work is going to say, it's worked for Mourinho in the Premier League, and he's absolutely right. Pep Guardiola struggled, you'd have to say, in his first campaign in the Premier League because his obstinance and his desire to win in the perfect, beautiful way that he's been able to at Barcelona with the best talent that any coach could have at his disposal. He's going to try to do that next season, and Mourinho's going to continue to do what he does, which is in big games, make it boring, man-mark their best player, do whatever he can to win the game. We're all going to sit there. We're going to build up to this remarkable Manchester derby. We're going to build up to this big game against Chelsea, against Conte, the reigning champions, and he's going to kill the game.
Yep.
And he may get the point that he needs. And so at the end of the day, that all hangs on, can Mourinho deliver a title? If he does, I'm wrong. I'll eat crow, and I'll say, you know what? Manchester United were right to hire this guy. He's brought them titles. He's brought them trophies. And it's worth the mess on the back end, which always comes with Mourinho. It always blows up. And that Real Madrid team that everyone throws out to say, yeah, they scored when he was a coach of Real Madrid. They could still score. They still were attacking-minded. No, you know what happened was eventually the team went back to their muscle memory and who they are and what they're capable of. I mean, Mourinho takes over a club like Real Madrid, doesn't turn it into his team. He just gets them to be a little more professional, gets them to be a little more defensive-minded because the end goal is to finish above Barcelona. And they did. But what happens after they do that? The players are so sick of playing that way. They don't want to play that way. Fans don't want to watch those games. So if Mourinho does that for Manchester United, success. If he doesn't, which I don't think he will, he's always won his titles in his second season. A lot needs to turn around in order for them to do that in the second season. Because by the way, all of the teams that finished above them are going to improve in the summer. All of them, well, I guess you could say Spurs are the only one that probably won't because of the switch to a new stadium, which is going to hinder them a little bit. But the competition to win a title in his second season is as hard as it's ever been.
Yeah.
This is the hardest job he's ever had. And they've proved that spending $500 million since Sir Alex Ferguson left isn't helping them a little bit. They're boring without the ball with Mourinho. They're boring with the ball with Louis van Gaal. They have a series of issues that's leading to next year being a powder keg. Does it blow up with success or does it blow up with failure? And if it blows up with failure, like I think it will, hiring Mourinho will have been a big mistake.
Well, just a quick question to kind of wrap this up, to move it forward, is if you are a player that might be interested in coming to Manchester United, such as Griezmann, James Rodriguez has sort of been thrown out there. Do you, when you watch that game and you see Marouane Fellaini playing as the number 10, does that make you want to come and play to play Manchester United when you're like, this is the guy that's going to be the playmaker for this group?
And by the way, they're losing players because of that. Mbappe supposedly in a, I think it was L'Equipe or some publication that he said that he said that he wasn't interested because of the style. It will hurt recruitment for sure. Now, the thing that Manchester United has that mitigates that is not only money, they can pay enormous wages, but prestige. It's still Manchester United at the end of the day. And so that will help them recruit talent. They're in Champions League, will help them recruit talent. And also, the short tenure of Jose Mourinho helps them recruit talent, because even if you don't want to play for Jose Mourinho, but you want to play for Manchester United, you say to yourself, I mean, how much longer is that guy going to be there? Really? I mean, he's never stayed at club past his third season, so I might not have to deal with that for that long. And Griezmann, I think they do have a legitimate chance at Griezmann, because coming from Diego Simeone, he's used to being asked to do the defensive side of things. So it's not a huge a deviation from what he's being asked to do currently. He'll also probably be given, I think, the striker role. You know, obviously he plays off of a striker more often than not, but I think with Ibrahimovic gone, I don't see him coming back to Manchester United, even though he's making a remarkable recovery from this knee injury and he's just a freak of nature.
Yeah.
Rashford, I don't think Mourinho's ready to put all of his confidence in. So if he's given the striker role and asked to do some defensive work in that team, he'll do that. I don't think that bothers him much. Just lately, it seems like he's finding the love, whether or not it's posturing, for Atletico Madrid again and sort of swearing his allegiance. So who knows? By the time you listen to this podcast, maybe they land him. But they need to land some big names.
Yep.
They need to land another strong defensive midfielder. They've re-signed Carrick, but I don't really think they can hitch their wagon to Carrick any that much longer, even though he still is playing at a very high level. The center back issue, I think they need another one. The Smalling, Jones can't stay fit, can't really put together a consistent campaign. So they've got to make some big signings. You know, fullback, The Luke Shaw thing, yep. I don't think Luke Shaw will be there next year. I mean, Darmian playing left back, not really sure that's the answer moving forward. So they've got to spend big. They will spend big. My issues with Jose Mourinho. And listen, you can, it's not mutually exclusive. You can respect the man, and of course I do. I have to. I mean, the titles he's won, you know, some people will say he's sort of a Tony Pulis with world-class players. That's a bit hyperbolic. I don't think Tony Pulis is winning with Porto, is winning with Real Madrid, is winning with some of these teams in the way Jose Mourinho was able to. But it's not that ridiculous to suggest that he's of that ilk. He's of the, I don't care. My goal is to capitalize on your weaknesses, not be progressive and not push the game and dominate. My goal is to neutralize you and then capitalize in the moments when we exploit your weaknesses. And it works. I just hate watching it. That's it. And so let's move on to the next subject, the next manager, which, by the way, is sort of the perfect antithesis of not only Jose Mourinho, but a final. That FA Cup final was just a joy to watch. I mean, the people say the magic is gone. That felt magical. An FA Cup final where Arsenal come out and absolutely go after Chelsea. Absolutely on the front foot, free-flowing. Ramsey supposed to be in a double pivot, flying forward, having a remarkable game. Mesut Ozil, the combination of, I would say, touch, I said this in a tweet, touch, tempo, and temperament, all the trifecta. He was incredible and showed why he's so high rated, but also showed why he's been so frustrating and disappointing this season, because I didn't see any of the moping body language that I've seen through the season when things aren't going well. I didn't see any of the lingering on the ball and slowing it down because things weren't really clicking and the team wasn't really coming together. I didn't see any of the sluggishness that we saw through the beginning of the year, which ultimately is why they fell out of the title race, was sort of the end of January, beginning of February. I saw world-class talent capable of running a game. And I saw an Arsenal team that, and I said this on the day as well, I saw an Arsenal team that epitomized why the Wenger out brigade is growing, because that Arsenal team should be winning titles. That Arsenal team we saw at Wembley against the title winner should be in a title race every single season, should be winning titles. And that's where the frustration comes from, is that they can do it on a day. And by the way, they can do it on a month. They can do it on a half a year, but they can't do it in an entire campaign. And that is what is so frustrating about this group, is they're talented enough, they're deep enough, and on their day, they're dominant enough to go win a title. And the fact that they're nowhere near it, the fact that they're nowhere close, is damning for Arsene Wenger.
So it's just the consistency, right? I mean, it all falls on Wenger, is what you're saying. You don't think the players take some of the blame for
this?
They have to. For Ozil, and I don't want to throw Alexis in there, but, you know, Ozil, I mean, someone like Ramsey, for example, all of a sudden plays great in a game like that, but where was he most of the season? You know, just I guess I don't know. I just, how much blame do you put on Wenger? How much do you put on the players?
Well, the blame is always there with the players, right? Because you're out there, you're in between the lines, and you have to do the business. But here's the thing: is this malaise, this lack of consistency, was there before Mesut Ozil was there? Was there before Alexis was there? It maintains, and that stasis is there through the changing of the team. So it's been there for the last decade, and that forces and begs the question: what's there as well? What hasn't changed? Arsene Wenger. So Arsene Wenger, the reason they have a weak mentality, the reason that they are vulnerable and fall apart at the most crucial point of the season, is because that message and that strong mentality and that ability to arrest those slides, to anticipate when things are falling apart, a la Antonio Conte this season with Chelsea, that falls on Arsene Wenger. And I would say that let me do a positive side for Arsene Wenger first. The FA Cup record he has is incredible, and being able to do that but not do it during a Premier League campaign begs another question. Why? Why can you do it in a cup competition but you can't do it in the Premier League? And I think the answer is pretty clear. That's more of a rhetorical question. But Arsene Wenger said that the disrespect he's getting from fans is disgraceful. And I agree. I do agree that Arsenal fans, they're the most delusional out there. They are. And by the way, I'd be delusional too if I was looking at a team as talented as Arsenal every season, but also looking at a team nowhere near the title. I'd be delusional as well. And I'd be irrational and upset. But he deserves respect. He deserves credit. He deserves love. He deserves praise. But you can do that and still think it's time to move on from him. And I honestly think that with Arsene Wenger, the only issue going on right now that I think assuages concerns that we're going to see another failed campaign is a few things that are very unique and we're seeing for the first time. One is a board that's showing a little backbone. So tomorrow, Tuesday, there's a board meeting. And supposedly in that board meeting is a discussion on whether or not to offer Arsene Wenger a contract. Now, I think that's a little bit of public spin. And I think the contract, 2-year extension, has already been offered. But I do think it's offered with strings for the first time. And I think ultimately the first string is call it sporting director, call it the director of football, call it whatever you want, but they're trying to claw some of the power back. And they're preparing for life after Arsene Wenger for the first time. So that's one new thing that I think is important. Another new thing that I think is important is a move to a back three. Now, forget tactically whether or not that's working. I think the results would say it is, or really drilling down to the nuance of that decision. The fact that decision was made is very important. Arsene Wenger is showing, listen, I can change. And that's one of the big things fans have been asking for is, listen, I love how we attack. I love the beautiful game. I love that's the way we want to play. But can we reel it in a little bit? Can we also be a little balanced and hedge our bets? Can we be a little more concentrated on who we are without the ball? And Arsene Wenger just made a huge statement, and he did it when we were over in England, a game we were covering at the Riverside against Middlesbrough.
That was the first game he did it.
And we all sat there and said, whoa, this is big. We honestly didn't believe it in the pregame. Lee Dixon gave us a little tip, and he had heard that it was going to happen from Steve Bould or whoever he gets his information from. And we were surprised. And it's worked. And it just delivered a title. So that's another thing that helps for Arsene Wenger in terms of if he stays, which we all think he will, that he's willing to change.
So you think he's showing signs he can adapt now?
Yes, I do.
Because that's always been one of his main critiques, is that he's very stubborn, and he does, you know, there's always, you know, be this call to get a more defensive midfield, mm-hmm. the defensive midfield, be stronger defensively. And I think it's maybe this season we finally, or towards the end, maybe we've seen him start to adapt and try and...
And maybe this is a bit of a compromise, is go to a back three instead of plug in the defensive midfield position with two steely tacklers. Xhaka's been playing a lot better recently, and that's obviously helped the back three. You know, Antonio Conte, for instance, a lot of people will say, Antonio Conte plays defensive-minded. Why does he get all this praise and Jose Mourinho doesn't? Let me sort of go on a tangent for that for a second and say one of the reasons is because everyone loves Antonio Conte, and he's a respectful guy that has an incredible amount of integrity and treats people really well. Jose Mourinho doesn't fall into that category, which is probably one reason he doesn't get the praise that Antonio Conte does. But also, playing a back three can be a defensive system that affords you a lot of attacking threat. So Alonso and Moses... Those are guys that basically become wingers in that system, and that's what's worked so well for Arsenal in this back three system. They can still be really attacking-minded with just a little more protection in transition defensively.
Well, the other thing with the back three that you've seen with Chelsea for this whole season and Arsenal towards the end is you see players like Hazard, Pedro, and Costa with a lot more freedom, because those three can just sit up top mm-hmm. and let everyone else behind them do all the work. And then we got to see Alexis, and I think that might be a big reason why you're saying Ozil played a lot better in this final too. I think he's had a lot more freedom with the system mm-hmm. change. So, whereas with Mourinho, again, we saw in the Europa League final, you see Juan Mata and Henrik Mkhitaryan playing as fullbacks.
Which as an attacking midfielder myself, that's another reason that I know Manchester United fans that are listening, and they were all over me on Twitter. Yes, I'm bitter, and I go at Jose Mourinho, which is a taste thing more than a objective analysis thing. Objectively, he's successful, and by the way, it's his prerogative. If he either chooses not to or can't be an attacking-minded coach that's going to dominate a game that way, you know, who cares? Because it's his prerogative, and he's winning that way. But as a player that grew up loving attacking-minded players and teams, and being an attacking-minded player myself, seeing Mkhitaryan and Mata asked to be basically wingbacks in a back six, it infuriates me. Mm-hmm. It drives me absolutely crazy. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things in this Arsenal system that's so great is Oxlade-Chamberlain, who is someone kind of, you know, really at the crossroads of his career. Whether or not he stays at Arsenal is a big question, but he's being reinvented a la Moses, a player that Jose Mourinho didn't like, as a really attacking-minded wingback. And I love it. I think he, even though he played off the left, that he's not the most comfortable in the FA Cup final, I think that's a great role for him. So I still think it's time to move on from Arsene Wenger. I'm not changing my mind just because they won an FA Cup. I think that they need to bring someone in who can shake things up as a new face with new ideas that can, in January and February, fix what Arsene Wenger can't. Freudian slip. See, I'm always on Mourinho. Fix what Arsene Wenger can't. But I'm sort of resigned now to accept that he's not leaving. He's staying. He wants to stay. The board are putting things in place to at least protect themselves and create the bridge to an era after Arsene Wenger. The big thing in this offseason is they don't have Champions League, and they have to increase their wage bill. So he's been a fiscally responsible coach his entire career, and they're moving in a direction where revenue is going to go down and expenditure is going to go up. If they want to keep Alexis, it's going to be upwards to £300,000 a week. I mean, for the first time, they're going to spend enormous, ridiculous Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea-type wages on a player. Mesut Ozil is, by the way, going to see that, hear that, get wind, and his agent's going to get in his ear. And then they need to attract talent to complement these guys. They have to continue to build and use this war chest that Ivan Gazidis brags about every single summer and go and supplement an already remarkably talented team.
So you just mentioned it. They finished fifth. They're the only team – or sorry, the only club out of the big six
to not have Champions League.
That are not going to be in the Champions League. So if you are one of the best players in the world and you have your option of going to any club, why would you choose Arsenal out of any of the other Premier
League
clubs?
The way they play. The way they play, it being in London, which is a big draw, and also wanting to be a part of, if you believe it, which I just laid out a case for it, the new era of Arsenal, even though it's still Arsene Wenger, but the era that's changed a little bit. And then all of a sudden, imagine you're on the Arsenal team that wins the title for the first time since the Invincibles. I mean, that's a big carrot. You know, I mean, that I think can attract top talent. But I think what attracts top talent more than anything, there's two things. It's success and style. When they come together, You're buying in the top category. You have your pick of some of the top players in the world if you have the money to do it. And typically, if you have style and success, you do have that money. But Arsenal have a style of play that is so pleasing on the eye, that is so enjoyable to be a part of, and if it comes with a consistency, I think that's what's frustrated Alexis so much, and that's why we've seen his body language and Mesut Ozil's body language not be the best, is they're used to style and success. They're used to both of them. And the fact that success isn't coming, but they got a little taste of it in that FA Cup. I mean, did you see the scenes of Arsene Wenger hugging Alexis? I mean, and Mesut Ozil, you know, on corner kicks, defensive corner kicks, patting guys and getting up for it. If they can deliver that, or promise it, or come close to it. Just get close to the sun. Just fly close to it. You know what I mean? Just finish second and do it in a way, not like a couple seasons ago when they had a late run and were nowhere near the title race. Be in the title race to the last Sunday. When Championship Sunday comes around, be in the title race, and that's success for Arsenal, even if you come up short. And if they feel like they can do that, then the style and success is there. And I said Arsene Wenger, the perfect time for him to leave is on this high right now. But for Arsene Wenger, I'm sure in his mind he's thinking, this is the perfect time to stay because success and style. I just delivered it. That right there is the picture. And it's the last picture of the Premier League, right? I mean, the FA Cup final is the last image you have of a Premier League season. So in terms of what we remember, you remember a bad Chelsea, even though they were excellent this season, and you remember a remarkable, irresistible Arsenal lifting a trophy at Wembley. So now the summer comes, you're on vacation, you're wherever you are with your wife or with your buddies, you're a world-class player. That image is in your head a little bit. So I'm even though I'm a part of the group that thinks it's time to move on from Arsene Wenger, I am optimistic that we're seeing a for the first time an acquiescence from Arsene Wenger that he knows it hasn't been good enough. He promised if he wasn't optimizing this team, he'd walk away. Ivan Gazidis said there's some structural changes coming. We need to move away from what's going on. If we fail this year and finishing outside of the top four, even though you got the FA Cup, is failure for Arsenal. So there's a feeling of a change of the tides right now for Arsenal, even if Arsene Wenger stays. You gave me a little extra there.
Well, you went long on Mourinho, yeah. So just a quick, I guess, quick question. Alexis Sanchez, is he back next season?
For the first time, I think, yeah.
Really?
I think he is. I think that part of this board meeting on Tuesday is going to be about that, is going to be about how do we keep Alexis and Mesut Ozil. If they didn't deliver FA Cup, I didn't think the FA Cup win or loss affected the Arsene Wenger decision at all. But I kind of feel like it affects the Alexis Sanchez decision. I think that if Bayern Munich want Alexis, they're going to get him. But I'm not entirely convinced Bayern Munich is going to pull out all the stops to go get him. I think that they're strong enough, especially in the areas that they'd need Alexis. I don't know if he's guaranteed to really be as important for Bayern Munich as he's going to be for Arsenal next year. And that's why he left Barcelona. I mean, don't forget, Alexis left the best club in the world in terms of style and success. You know, some will argue that, but I don't think, especially when Pep was there and Alexis was there, that you have a case. He left because he wasn't a regular starter. He wasn't a star. He is a bona fide star for Arsenal. He is the first name on the team sheet every single week, except for against Liverpool in that weird game at Anfield when we couldn't believe he wasn't the first name on the team sheet. But I for the first time think he's staying.
Do you think, you know, the two Robbies talked about this on their podcast the other day, do you think he's the best player in the Premier League right now?
Yeah, I heard that discussion. I think the best player in the Premier League, and this is a little abstract and I won't have a lot of people in my group, is David Silva. I think David Silva makes his team better in ways that aren't as noticeable. I think you notice every single time Alexis makes the team better because it's visually spectacular. It's hardworking. He's like a hurricane of skill out there. And David Silva, there's kind of like Mesut Ozil. Like, I always get in this debate with Rebecca Lowe every single weekend about Mesut Ozil and why I love him so much. And sometimes she'll point at him and say, I don't get it. It's just because the nuance of his game, and David Silva is the perfect example of this. And I'm going to name drop right now and say that I was talking with Thierry Henry about this, and he said David Silva is his player of the league, one of his favorite players to watch, what would have been a player he'd love to play with. He said Dennis Bergkamp is the best player he ever played with, and it's for similar reasons. Sometimes you don't notice his impact on the game. But if I have to choose between Eden Hazard and Alexis, as the Robbies were on their podcast, I take Alexis.
I guess it's a kind of fitting you bring up Henry there, is because Alexis is starting to loop himself in with Henry and, I think, Robin Van Persie. Some of these players are just some of the best players have come through Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And obviously, those two ended up leaving to go to another club to try and go win trophies, in which they ended up doing. Henry left. He finally won the Champions League with Barcelona, mm-hmm. and Van Persie finally got to win win the Premier League title with
Manchester United.
So
yeah.
Would this be another step forward to show that if they can hang on to Alexis, that it shows progress?
Yeah.
And we're not going to see this cycle that we've seen of Arsenal the last couple seasons.
Yeah, and there was a strong visual sort of moment that encapsulated what you were talking about in the FA Cup final. A Cesc Fabregas, who left Arsenal and began his acquisition of every trophy you can imagine and filling his case, I thought he was going to come on in an FA Cup final against his old club and take a trophy from them. And it was an interesting moment that one of the guys that left, that split at the height of his career to go win titles elsewhere. You know, obviously he won the Premier League title with Chelsea this year, but came into a game to watch his old club win an FA Cup over him. That was just a little moment, as I said, that just felt like, okay, guys like Alexis, guys like Mesut Ozil that want style and success, is this just a little taste? Is this just enough to say, trust, believe that we can do it? And it just kind of all hinges on Arsene Wenger. And I'll say this, typically when a manager leaves, and this is the case going back to Jose Mourinho, one of the most successful managers of all time, you see a team not playing for him anymore. That FA Cup final and in the run-in, the end of the season, what have you seen? You've seen an Arsenal team absolutely playing for their manager. I mean, it's impossible to argue that that group isn't behind him or isn't willing to play for him, because Aaron Ramsey sort of is leading the keep Arsene Wenger charge, and that was one of the best games he's had in a while, which reminded you how much they've missed him, how much they've missed guys like Cazorla, and how good this team can be if they can just figure out what happens to them for a month or two during the season. If they can figure out the crux of that issue, which I obviously, you know, put on Arsene Wenger. If Arsene Wenger can figure that out, if he can be a different person for them, which moving to a back three is the first step towards that, as I said, then who knows? Who knows with Arsenal next year? I'd say that Arsenal, even though Jose Mourinho has labeled Arsene Wenger a specialist in failure and has the titles behind him to be able to make such a derogatory statement of his rival, Arsenal seem on paper much closer to winning titles than Manchester United do. So if Mourinho shows that he can leapfrog them and either go win a title or get closer to winning a title next year, and Arsenal are still toiling, it just becomes very clear that Arsene Wenger is the issue.
Yeah, I was just going to say, to kind of wrap this up, is since they made that switch to the back three, they've played 10 matches in all competitions, and they've won 9. And they've beat teams like Man City, Man United, and Chelsea.
And they've also beat teams like Middlesbrough. Yeah,
true.
But you're right. They've beat some very strong, very attacking-minded mm-hmm. teams. I think the win against Manchester City, although there was a good goal called back in that game, was one of the more impressive, and this one against Chelsea, more impressive demonstrations. Also, one thing we didn't mention was friggin' Mertesacker. By the way, Twitter was filled with memes and all sorts of criticisms of Mertesacker, and that was one of the best performances I've seen from him for club or country. And he did it on a season where he hasn't played a competitive game in almost a year. Incredible.
Especially you didn't have Koscielny and Mustafi in there.
Yeah,
it would be one thing if you think
Monreal
he had
and Holding,
if
right?
You think if he had those two with him, you're like, okay, that's fine. You can kind of hide him in there, but he's playing, like you said, Holding and Monreal, two guys who aren't really, I mean, Holding's just coming in, and Monreal's been a fullback most of the
incredible
season. So,
I mean, I guess however you slice it, next year is going to be amazing. You know, the Manchester race of what wins? Pep's free-flowing, attacking-minded style, which, by the way, didn't have a rave first season, and also hasn't really succeeded in the Premier League, just a full-out, all-attacking-minded team in a very, very long time. Or Jose Mourinho's pragmatic approach. That's going to be fascinating. We thought we were going to watch that battle play out in the first season with those two guys, this past season, and it didn't. Jurgen Klopp, how much closer can he get? You know, he's improved. They're moving in the right direction.
Another team,
big decisions to make.
They've got to make a lot of signings, I think.
And they're going to. Yep. They're going to spend big. He's said it for the first time. Chelsea, can Conte sort of arrest was this bad FA Cup final performance a foreshadowing of another slip, another slump, another fall off from a title from this Chelsea group? Probably not with Antonio Conte. That's, I mean, his fourth title in a row, if you go back to the three in a row he won for Juventus. And then
Spurs.
That one I'm more concerned about. I think all the other clubs I just mentioned are going to improve, are going to get better. I just think moving out of White Hart Lane and into Wembley is going to hurt Spurs. But any way you slice it, next season's shaping up to be...
Yeah, I'm already excited. You just got me excited. We just finished the season.
We only have 2 or 3 months to go. And speaking of that, the Tad Pods are going to not come as regularly, but we're going to do one after the U.S. World Cup qualifier coming up, qualifiers. And we're going to drop in from time to time.
Do a quick one after the Champions League.
Yeah, after Champions League, we'll jump on a little bit. So we'll give you guys your fix. And then I'm going to go on a bit of a hiatus, and PJ is going to go off to France and do the Tour de France and, you know, just be the guy he is, which is a sports producer phenom that's working every single weekend when we have our feet up. But we love you.
We love you, PJ.
Thanks. It's good to have you back. It's good to be back in the studio. It's good to be back with you, Tad Potters. So review the show, subscribe, tell your buddies, whatever you do, stay on your feet.